This interview first appeared on the Spectator podcast, and if you'd like to hear more from the Spectator podcast, just search for Spectator Radio on the iTunes store. So, lorry is backing up in Kent, a Mars bar shortage, and no more Roman city breaks. These are just some of the things that we've been warned might happen if we get to a no-deal Brexit. But what will actually happen? I speak to two people who somewhat disagree. Lord Lilly is one of the leading advocates of so-called clean Brexit. Ian Dunn, editor of politics.co.uk and the author of Brexit, What the Hell Happens Next, says it would be a monumental act of self-harm. Welcome both. So Peter, I mean, only a year ago it seemed as if Brexiteers were even warning that a no deal might be a bit dangerous, but now you seem almost gung-ho. Can you explain why that is?
I'm not gung-ho, but the fears then were based on the knowledge then, which was that no preparations were known to have been made, and if no preparations were made, there would be problems. Now we know preparations are being made. All the fears relate either to the belief that we will stop things coming into the country, which is absurd. We won't. HMRC have said that they will have no additional checks at Dover beyond those that they have at present, because they only check lorries to look for illegal contraband, cigarettes, drink, which hasn't paid duty, drugs and illegal immigrants, and the risk of that will not change. But the whole thesis, therefore, was that there'd be problems in Calais, which would back up across the Channel. That was blown apart yesterday by the president of the Calais and Boulogne ports, who said on the Today programme, to their obvious annoyance, that the same would apply in Calais. There will be no additional checks, there will be no delays. Their priority is to ensure the smooth flow of trade through Calais. They're terrified of loss of trade to Zeebrugge, Amsterdam and Rotterdam. And he was very upset that the British government is going to take some of their trade away by hiring ferries to go to Ostend and other ports. So the whole belief that there's going to be chaos in Kent is now absolutely blown apart. It is not going to happen. I'm prepared to bet a large sum of money payable to Mencap, my favourite charity, to anyone who disagrees with me.
Ian, you've warned that a no-deal Brexit is a really bad idea, so I suppose you've got a slightly different view on that.
I do. I mean, to take up on, I mean, obviously, you know, from the very beginning, I wrote a book on Brexit sort of about 2 years ago now, and the very first thing that was said to me by expert after expert, whether it was in health, whether it was in aviation, whether it was in trade, was really anywhere, especially in haulage, they would always say, look, the thing that absolutely cannot happen, beyond anything else, beyond Brexit, soft Brexit, hard Brexit, whatever, is that we have no deal. That is the thing that you just simply cannot allow to happen if you are any kind of developed, sensible country. I have to take issue, I think, with what was said in terms of the Calais port. I mean, it was an interesting interview that he gave, and I understand why you're raising it. He immediately afterwards put out some information via his meeting with the Road Haulage Association, where they asked him, well, by that then, do you mean that you are not going to be asking to check the entry and exit customs arrangements, the certificates that the haulage has to have, and the security and safety inspection documents? Now, his answer to that was, no, of course, we do have to check that. He's saying we won't check regulatory. We won't do regulatory checks on manufacturing. We will do, he said, regulatory checks on agriculture, and they will check the customs certification. Now, that's a major deal. When you certificate for customs, you have to do that for each shipment. Now, some of these lorries carry thousands of things. Sometimes you have a lorry, it's very easy, it's just full of oranges, so it's just one customs declaration. Sometimes you have lorries, very often, in fact, that have tens of thousands of items on them. Bottle of wine for me, book for you, chair for your dad. In that case, you need one of these documents for each of those shipments. The document runs to about 30 pages. We have no practice in this country in business of filling out those forms. They're quite complicated. Then you look at the UCL's traffic report that it did 1 year ago for the Department of Transport. This is a secret report. It's not really put out. It's not Project Fear. It's only been uncovered now. But they look that if we have an 80-second increase in checks, which is easily accounted for by the kind of checks that we just talked about in terms of customs, you would get total shutdown of the roads in this country. They call it total failure. And in that case, no, I am not sanguine about it at all, even on that basis, on the basis of what was said. I think it's very troubling indeed.
Well, you admitted that your evidence was based up on 2 years ago before any preparations had been made, and it's a shame you haven't changed your mind since the preparations have been made. The Calais authorities are relying on expecting there to be a 2-minute checking process. They have to check the passport of the driver already. And, you know, I go back and forth the whole time. And often the delays are significant. But he said quite explicitly, if anyone hasn't properly got their form, then they've made parking available to put them to one side and consider them. They're not going to allow jams to back up across the channel. And that's quite explicit. Of course, these forms are a blasted nuisance. I'm against having to fill in forms if you don't have to. But that is a factor of us being outside the customs union, which we've promised to do at the general election and in the referendum. And that people have to get used to. You say we've no experience. Of course, this is precisely what happens on all our trade with all non-EU countries. It happens. There are no hold-ups at Southampton, which is predominantly non-EU trade. And it's more difficult where there are lorries, and as you say, lorries with lots of stuff in the back. They will undoubtedly have to get used to it. As he said, they are having an educational process on the lorries going through the ferries at present. You can't sort of deny, on the basis of what he may have said privately, what he said publicly and what everybody else has said and what HMRC has said, there will be no extra checks and there will be no delays at the border because they will give priority to flow over compliance.
To be clear, it's completely public, he said, that we will obviously be doing these customs checks. And HMRC have said, yeah, we can try and keep it to the minimum. What they said was that they require about 5 to 7 years. Now, let me finish one. If you want to do this thing, I don't think it's a very sensible idea. I mean, it seems like something that would deteriorate Britain. But if you were to do it, you need to come up with deliverable timescales. Now, the weeks that we have left simply are not deliverable. The way that we operate in terms of food in Europe, we've heavily relied on it, is just-in-time production. Okay. For a long time, it goes for manufacturing as well. Factories are no longer the home of what goes on. They are a central hub in a production process. Now, in there, it is just simply no point comparing what goes on with our imports from the US or from Canada to what we do with our largest and, most importantly, our closest partner. That things are designed to happen immediately. And when you come up with stoppages in the system, you will very quickly see that break down. Now, I do think you can do this thing if you were to say to yourself, look, we've got about 5 years on it. If you say we're going to do this in weeks, that is, I mean, it's just crazy, man.
Well, we've said that if there are problems initially, the vehicles will be waved through. I've suggested, actually, we should suspend all tariffs for the first 2 months across the world, not just to the EU.
Well, you'd have to, wouldn't you, under WTO rules?
So that could be done for the first few months if there are any difficulties. I don't think there will be.
Do you think there will be no difficulties at all? I mean,
well, there will be difficulties for individual companies if they haven't bothered to learn how to fill in a customs return. It's not.
Can I ask you this question, I suppose? It's just, I guess what I would ask is, because, you know, I don't do haulage, right? Mm. And I don't work in radioactive isotopes, okay? But what is the degree of proof that you need? So if you talk to the Road Haulage Association, they will say that this is the case. This will be a disaster for us. Please don't let it happen. If you talk to people that work in radioactive isotopes for cancer screening and treatment, they say, please God, do not do this because people will die. If you talk to the food industry, they say,
based on the assumption there are going to be problems and holdups at the port.
But that is their expert assessment.
And
stand back and look at it and just go, why would these people say these things, these experts in the areas and the industries that they work in, why would they say it? Does it never cause you any doubt whatsoever?
I analyse what they say, and they will say, effectively, if we can't get the stuff through the ports, there is a problem. But they are taking if from what they read in the newspapers and what they hear, the scare stories, and which were legitimate scare stories before preparation had been made.
The Road Haulage Association are not reading the newspapers. They are saying, I've sat there with them, and they have shown me the forms, and those forms will have to be filled in.
But they're not filled in at the place. They're filled in electronically. But of course, the returns are electronic. And they are not saying...
It's not always strictly true. Well, sometimes you need paper documentation. We almost certainly would in no deal because the systems wouldn't be put in place.
That's not the case. The chief system will be used, the CDS system's coming in already, and they will be done electronically. If someone has, and you will have just some evidence that it's been done, but the idea that anyone ever at any port goes and opens the back of a lorry and says, is what you've said in box 23 on your form true? They only do that if they have reason suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief computer puts it all through an algorithm, and if they think that it's a suspicious consignment because it's coming from a country, from a company which deals with countries where there are drugs and that sort of thing, they will inspect it. But it's 1% of all consignments. The 99% go through unchecked.
What is it that makes you question it? When the Road Haulage Association says it will take an extra 4 minutes, what is it that makes you... Do you think that they are lying?
No.
Or do you think that they are misinformed about the thing that they have done for their entire life?
But, well, do you think HMRC are lying or misinformed?
Can I ask you, just for the answer on that specific
point? No, I think I've never known a business group which is not opposed to change, which does not forecast problems when change occurs.
Well, that's true.
Are we not somewhat relying on the goodwill of the French, to honour their word?
It's not goodwill. They're not doing it to please us. Not doing it to even for the joy of having our exporters getting through. It's because they're terrified of losing trade from Calais. Calais is just about to expand. They're building a whole new port. And they are aghast at the thought, just the point they're increasing their capacity, they're going to lose trade to Ostend, Zeebrugge, Rotterdam. And they're very explicit. That's what they say in their press releases. That is our priority, to avoid losing trade to other ports. And that's why they will see that it all goes smoothly. There are a lot of people who've got a vested interest in keeping the scare stories going, but I just can't see why you would. The people who run the ports must know most about
the
ports.
I do struggle with this thing of scare stories. So I've sat there, let's say, if you take technetium, right? Technetium is the radioactive isotope that we use to screen for prostate cancer, for heart disease, for thyroid disease. There's hundreds of thousands of people in this country that use it. It has a half-life of 6 hours. And molybdenum, which is obviously the parent isotope, has a half-life of 66 hours. Now, every second that thing is held up, it loses its capacity to help humans. And after a certain point, you can't use it because, of course, you get the effect of the radioactivity without any of the medical benefits. Now, you talk to those guys, and they genuinely will sit there with you. These are senior doctors. These are not hysterical people. And they will say that people are going to die if you do this because we cannot stockpile this material.
I
have to say, are you really suggesting they just sit there, they watch the BBC, they have a complete fit and just start spewing out all of this nonsense? Because that, to me, doesn't seem tenable. And when I'm presented with them or a series of Tory MPs that it happens to coordinate with the political aim that they have had, I'm going to go with the doctors.
Well, I'm going to go with the port authorities who say there aren't going to be delays. If there were delays, obviously that would have an effect. Mm. Now, let's look at history. In 2015, for 23 near consecutive days, Calais was blockaded by the fishermen. The ferries, the trains were impeded by the immigrants getting over the fences. We had 7,000 lorries backed up in Kent. We had delays of 36 hours. What happened? Who died? Tell us.
Very strange comparison that you've just made.
This is precisely the fear. We've had a case study of what happens through Calais.
You have blockages. What you do not have is an entire country overnight changing a trading relationship that it has had for four decades, sir. It's quite absurd to make the comparison.
Well, it isn't a comparison because you're saying that the result of this change will be chaos in Kentish roads. We had that. We know what it's like.
I mean, it's a bit like saying to a man that's having a heart attack that he'll be fine because he broke his arm once and he didn't die then.
No, on the contrary. Oh, if you're saying it's going to be worse than then. But if you're saying a few seconds delay is a serious matter, we had 36 hours delay. Look, read the report on Operation Stack. It goes into detail. Did a single car company in this country have interruption of production? I don't know. They found ways around it.
It's just a very bizarre comparison, I have to tell you, sir.
Peter, can I ask you about the...
It is precise. It's not a comparison.
Well, you're talking
it
about something
exactly
that is the difference
same.
Between something that is a system-wide change over 40 years of trading to a blockage. Now, of course, blockages happen. Of course, that is the case. But that is obviously not directly comparable in terms of quantity and scale to the matter that we are discussing right now.
Oh. Peter, can I ask you about the political fallout from this? Because, I mean, you say you think all the preparations have been made and the government's going to be able to manage this, but say it does go wrong or it doesn't look as if it's going that well, do you think the risk to the Tories is that it may lead to a Corbyn government?
I'm more worried about just getting it right than I am about what the political consequences will be. The important thing is to get it right, and I think we can and will get it right. It's not beyond the wit of man to arrange for exactly the same number of lorries who come in at present to come in future without delays. it's not hugely difficult.
I don't know what happened to the... I mean, Tories and Labour, to me right now, just seem like the most appalling sort of mountain of gibberish ideological nonsense, and I'm horrified by the state of both of them.
Fair enough. Can I ask you about the economy as well, Peter? Because, I mean, do you think there's a risk that this could lead to a recession?
No.
Not at all?
Not this. I mean, I think there is a risk of a recession in the world at the moment. We've clearly at the peak of a cycle. And there's a lot of sign, you know, Germany economy's actually had negative growth in recent months. Chinese economy's got problems. But that's nothing to do with Brexit. That is a problem that is likely to occur in the next 18 months.
I mean, is there anything that worries you about no-deal Brexit?
Yes, I mean, I would prefer not to have tariffs. I think tariffs are the issue, and I would prefer, therefore, to have a free trade deal with our European neighbours. They did offer that on the 7th of March this year and repeated on the 4th of October. The issue, why the government didn't even bother to reply to the offer, as far as I know, is that they assumed that it didn't include Ireland. We should revive it, but say we've got to get rid of the Irish Protocol and replace that by a commitment, which all three parties have given, that in the event of no deal, there will not be checks at the border or border posts in Ireland. We deal with cross-border trade at present, where there is smuggling of duty-paid goods, which are different rates either side of the border, VAT, which is zero on exports and 20% on domestic, and so on. We deal with that without border posts. We control flow of drugs, which actually finance the paramilitaries, so it's a really serious matter. Nobody says that you have to have border posts or border checks to deal with those problems. We could certainly control any illicit flow of Dyson vacuum cleaners without having border posts.
Okay. So, I mean, it's quite basic stuff, but I guess I better explain it. So, the way that regulations work in a country and the way that law works is that you pass a law. Let's say you pass a law against the use of chemicals in children's toys, or the way that electromagnetic equipment works in a car and the way that it might affect people's sort of heart monitors or something. And then you have to enforce that law. And products from outside need to be checked to make sure that they come up to this standard. And there is a very simple reason for this. Like, imagine if today a child in Britain eats contaminated meat, contaminated beef burger, and he dies. Now, very obviously, the next day, we're going to start asking questions about where did it come from? Where was it shipped? What was the factory? Where was the animal reared? Now, if that meat came from overseas, you need to make sure that you have some kind of legal operating system that allows you to assess that. Now, if it is a different jurisdiction and you are doing no checks, you have no control. And it seems to me that that doesn't quite chime with the motto that you guys had when you were campaigning in the referendum.
No, I mean, you're quite right. They have to be. But do the checks and controls have to be at the border? At present, we have the traces system.
Yes, agricultural goods, they do have to be at the border. No, and they are everywhere.
They have to be in the vicinity of the border.
No. For agriculture, for everything else, you're right. For manufacturing,
border,
absolutely, you can do
border
it.
Inspection
for agricultural posts, goods, they have to be on the border. And that is the same everywhere.
Well, the border inspection posts theoretically have to be in the border. The one at Calais is going to be 12 kilometres behind Calais. The one at Rotterdam is 40 kilometres away from the main port. So you can have these border inspection posts at some distance under EU law, and that's accepted, and everybody knows that. Now, at present, under the traces system, if you ship animals from Ireland from, you know, one EU country to another, you have to get a veterinary certificate before you do it. When we're a separate country, you'll have to get a different veterinary certificate before you do it, but it won't be hugely different. And, of course, you've got to have a kind of ability to trace things. And it's not just animals.
How do you intend to do that if you have nothing on the border? Because at the moment, what you are suggesting is that we are taking these products with no checks whatsoever.
Well, the checks usually come at the point of sale. If the idea that
that's a separate jurisdiction,
For instance, if China sends electric kettles to France, the customs man doesn't carry out a check on the electric circuitry of the electric kettle. If there are any doubts about it, then it will come to light, and the trading standards people will do it. There will have to be a certification available, which the Chinese company will get from a certification body, either in the European Union, or actually sometimes certification bodies are in other countries, which are recognised by the EU. But they're not actually all inspected at the border.
Sorry, but what do you think so of the border? So, what you're saying is perfectly true in terms of electronic and manufactured goods, that very often we'll do that at point of production, and you sort of have, you know, mutual recognition that allows the sort of domestic certificator to do that. what is separate in agricultural, as you sort of alluded to, is the special border inspection post. And that's where we do it right there. So again, I come back to that question of mine, which is just like, if a child in Northern Ireland, if your arrangement takes hold and we say, look, we're not going to do any checks, we're going to keep the border right open. There's a child in Northern Ireland.
No, I'm saying we're not going to do any checks on the border. Not that they can't check, as they do at present, animals going across the border. And indeed, actually, all animals from live animal exports are going through Larne, actually, from Great Britain.
Sure, sure.
Because it's a separate phytosanitary area, are checked at Larne. That happens at present. So that sort of thing can happen without sparking off a revival of the IRA or the loyalism.
Okay.
Well, I think we've had probably enough on the border stuff. But
you're almost acting like this isn't fascinating for everyone involved.
Sure, everyone's delighted to hear about Chinese cattle. But do you think it's fair to say that your position is that we can't leave the EU just because it's too much of a bureaucratic nightmare?
I wouldn't leave the EU because it's a terrible idea. I mean, this is, what we're talking about right now is no deal, which is
but if we could get over the border issue, do you think there are some things that, you know, could be a positive about no deal?
What benefits would exactly. From no deal, that no deal is a catastrophically
nothing
stupid
good can
thing
come
to do.
No deal.
You can make an argument, I think, for in Brexit, if you have to be really desperate, you can try and find reasons to do it. I mean, you could sort of start saying, you know, common agricultural policy is not particularly good. There's bits and pieces that you might change. Of course there is in every political system. It's never like everything's perfect. So of course you have bits and pieces that you would like to change, that you would do differently if you were outside of it. I get that. In terms of no deal, that is the magnitude of the stupidity of the proposition is so astonishing that genuinely it shocks me as a British patriot that it has taken some sort of mainstream position in our society. I am every day genuinely shocked that this thing is being considered.
And would you be as shocked if we get to no deal and there isn't quite as dramatic fallout as you're predicting?
Yeah, well, I'll make the same gamble that you made earlier on the charity giving. I'll give mine to the Joint Council for the Welfare of Immigrants and we'll both do 50 quid.
Cheap at the price.
How much were you expecting me to do?
I was saying just 100 and I got 1,000.
I'm on a journalist salary. Thank you very much. Yes.
We'll hold you to both of those, by the way.
What are the merits of WTO exit? First of all, we keep £39 billion. That is, so rather than crashing out, we're cashing in. That's not a bad thing to do.
It's piddly figures compared to what we're talking about.
Billion.
It might as well
to
be.
My friend on a journalist's salary, £39 billion
is
a lot of money.
I would do very well off it. But for a country, in terms of assessing its entire trading relations, talking about £39 billion is not a very
sensible thing
to
do. The tariffs our exporters will pay per annum are £5 billion if they are outside the EU and face the EU economy. So £39 billion is not trivial compared with £5 billion, I would have thought.
So it's not all about tariffs.
No, it's not all about tariffs. Okay, change your own. £39 billion is a positive to my mind. You think it's trivial. Secondly, it ends uncertainty. Uncertainty, well, all businesses face uncertainty. They don't know what their competitors are going to do. They don't know what their suppliers are going to do and so on. But the worst kind of uncertainty is an uncertainty that's going to end at a specific date when a decision is made by the authorities. And that's what we've faced ever since the 26th of June. That people have been putting off decisions until they know what the outcome's going to be. On the 29th of March, if we leave without a withdrawal agreement, they will know what the situation is. Some will like it, some will not like it. But then they will be able to get on and deal with it. They'll invest to take advantage of opportunities or to cope with problems. And it will end uncertainty economically. It will end uncertainty politically. We can get on and discuss more important things than the terms of leaving, how we use the powers we get back once we've left. So that's the second great advantage. The third advantage is that it leads to all parties concerned having to resolve the Irish border issue without border posts. All have said they will do so. Varadkar has said, if we leave without a deal, there will not be border posts or border checks. The EU have said, likewise, they will not require border posts or border checks. We've said, under no circumstances will we have border posts or border checks. So we will all cope with it administratively by administrative processes, electronic submission of documents and so on away from the border, and then we can have a straight free trade deal between Britain and the EU, and likewise we'll be free to have trade deals with the rest of the world. We've been invited to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership as the only non-Pacific nation. It's a huge area. We're invited. The EU isn't. So we're invited to have a I'm sorry, actually, just sniggering the whole time.
Sorry,
doesn't
it's just so
add
preposterous. I mean, the
what is preposterous
that the EU
about
is
being
close to where we
I'm
are?
I'm saying with the
and
EU,
that
as
area
well as
is very far away.
Why not
so
have
it is
both?
Worth less to our trade.
Why not have both?
I'd have to take you up on a certainty argument. So the EU, came up and said, we have got our own no-deal prep, which they're doing unilaterally. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it with us. And part of it was they gave us something on aviation. You can go to and from, but you can't go within Europe. It's a major change, but it's better than having a minor change. No, I'm sorry.
What proportion of flights do cabotage?
We have British companies that were able to fly between any two European cities and are now unable to do so. When it comes to haulage, you have haulage certificates, right? I mean, these basically, I think it's 2,000 of the 40,000 haulage lorries that we have going into Europe would get those certificates.
That's been solved too.
So the EU has now said, we are going to give you this and we're going to continue as we were before. How long for?
9 months.
You said we suddenly have certainty, and yet the provisions that are in place on aviation is 12 months, on haulage is 9 months. It is an EU chokehold. It is not freedom. It is putting ourselves entirely at their mercy, and I find it quite baffling why you would propose it.
Well, I don't believe that the EU are quite as malicious as you seem to think and want nonetheless to put our
fate in their... They're a self-interested negotiating partner.
Exactly. They've said on Haulier's that there is a problem because the number of licences for the current year have already been agreed by the body that assesses them. So they've said they will allow, the EU will allow us to continue to trade, Haulier's to continue to operate until the end of the year. And during that year, they, along with us, will lobby the organisation that gives these licences, not just to us, but to 38 countries, to increase the number to accommodate all the hauliers involved. And they have an interest in doing it. They're not doing it out of love for us, because their hauliers happen to be a majority of the hauliers involved that need these things. So that will happen. Secondly, on aviation, they've said for 12 months... Well, that's on aviation
safety... Aviation's 12 months, I think, and haulage is 9.
Certificates. Mm. Safety certificates, you're saying. That...
No, I'm talking about, to be honest, aviation treaty of really rights to fly to and from.
No, that's indefinite.
I think you are right on safety certificates is also 12 months.
As safety certificates, 12 months.
We're going to lose every listener by what we're doing right now, but yes, we'll crack on.
Anyway, no, they've said that our planes will be able to fly over, land in and return from, but not do land pickup and things, which very few do. If they want to do that, they have to do as EasyJet has already done, set up a company there, which majority ownership will hand it. And they've done that. So that is solved. As far as safety certificates like Airbus Wings, they didn't want to stop Airbus Wings getting to Toulouse because their Airbuses cannot fly without wings. And it's dawned on them. So they're for a year going to recognise existing certificates. And during that time, EASA, which already recognises safety organisations outside Europe, will be able to recognise our safety organisation. They have to go through the formal process of validating them. You know, we are a pretty safe body, recognised by other countries, and they will want that for the future. So they're not doing it out of love for us.
My question is on this. It's uncertainty. Now, all of the expectation around this, look at the Civil Aviation Authority, who have had no interest in taking on all of the... EASA is the European Aviation Safety Agency, which needs to sort of vouchsafe. Even the lorry you see on a plane is vouchsafed by this thing, the wings, the engine, all of that. And you need to have it in place. Even on that basis, we don't really want that stuff. We've been seeking to be able to sort of stay inside of EASA in some way. Now, it's not a formal thing that we're going to do. It's actually quite complicated over those 12 months, and there's no certainty about what it is that we are trying to achieve or if it will be doable in that time. It's a massive infrastructural upgrade in terms of safety assessment. So you say that there is suddenly certainty, and I have to say, I look at it and think, I see the opposite of certainty.
Well, I think it's pretty safe and certain, and they don't want great uncertainty about the sale of Airbuses, do they? And it's not just them. I mean, Boeing hasn't been making any fuss about this. They've invested actually quite heavily in over the last 2 years in more stuff that which will be providing things mainly to America. It's true, but no. I think it's going remarkably well, and I am surprised that it's the European Europhiles like you who most believe that the EU will carry out a sort of scorched earth policy.
No, I believe it's a self-interested economic actor.
Exactly.
Which is exactly how it would operate. And it has operated over the last 2 years in a way that makes sure that its own interests are represented.
Absolutely.
It's taken advantage of our own negotiating confusion. So I do not look at it as this wonderful angel in the wings, nor as a demon in the back. It is simply a self-interested economic actor, and the kind of behaviours that I'm describing are the sorts that sort of organisation would take.
Yeah, and I entirely agree. And I think they're very sensible. And we can negotiate.
We found a moment of agreement. We have to close it.
We have to stop it there. Brilliant.